Support this podcast via our Patreon and get more writerly goodness. Visit patreon.com/nanocast to join up.
Welcome to NaNoWriMo Every Month. My name is J. Daniel Sawyer. I'm the author of some 20 books, 34 short stories, and numerous articles and other things, and I am your guide on this journey to use NaNoWriMo to level up to professional output levels. Welcome to The Questions, Episode 61. Today, Kane asks, can you do the type of topic explanation in regards to what we are likely to find in a standard writing contract, such as when you are having a short story published either in a magazine or an anthology? I realize that every contract is different, but what about pretty standard things that are in them and possibly not in them, and what to look for and why you should look out for them? Oh boy, Kane, this is a huge topic. It's literally a topic so huge that I've sort of been pecking away at writing a book about it for a few years now. It's difficult to write a book about this topic without transgressing into the territory of giving legal advice, which is something someone who is not a lawyer should not be doing. So, for everything I'm about to talk about, please bear in mind, I am not a lawyer, and my experience and whatever middling expertise I might occasionally demonstrate is an utter accident of the school of hard knocks. Learning basic copyright law and contract law is absolutely essential to being a writer in today's environment. Frankly, it was essential in every environment, but a lot of writers never bothered under the old system because they could maintain for themselves a lot more easily the illusion that they were being taken care of. You can't have that illusion anymore because the system is now so arranged that it is, quite frankly, patently obvious to anyone with half a brain that nobody involved actually gives much of a shit about you. And that doesn't sound very comforting, but it's actually a very healthy thing because you're not operating under a cloud of delusion that may lead you to getting taken advantage of. So with that in mind, let me try to tackle this topic here. A contract is an agreement between two parties as to how a matter of business will proceed. In the case of a writing contract, and what you're talking about isn't actually a writing contract, what you're talking about is a licensing agreement. A writing contract would be something more along the lines of someone hiring you to write something to order as an employee. You're an employee, your job is to write something for your employer. The connotations in legal things are important. So, when you sign a book deal or a terms of service agreement with any of the online ebook distributors, or a contract to get your work into an anthology, or a contract to get your work into a magazine, what you're signing is a license agreement. The license agreement is you as a writer are selling the publisher, or the distributor, or whoever it is, the right to do certain things with your work. In the case of an online distributor, you're giving them the right to store copies of your work on their servers, to make copies of your work, and to sell it to people, on the condition that they operate according to certain rules, one of them being the amount of money they pay to you as a result of each sale. When it comes to a short story contract in a magazine, you are selling the right for the magazine to print, sometimes also to record for podcast or audiobook, your story. And generally, you will be selling them the exclusive right, meaning they're the only one in the world that can do it, or at least the only one in a territory or a language that can do it, for a specific amount of time, and then that right will turn non-exclusive, which means you can then resell the right to publish or to publish yourself and that sort of thing. Now, all of that's got some stuff in it. Okay, the first thing every license agreement has to have is a term. No contract is valid without a term. The term can be as long as for the length of copyright, which is your life plus 70 years. The term can be as short as for this afternoon, or for the next hour. It can be specified by calendar date. It can be specified by an event, such as this contract shall continue to be in force unless and until Party A provides Party B with notification by email or in writing or by phone call or whatever that the license is being revoked and then the following things happen. Then the contract provides for the wrap-up of the relationship after the relationship ends. So the first thing to bear in mind is term. And when you're looking to license your copyright out to a third party, you want to look at how long the term is and what they're paying for the rights you're licensing and how that compares to market rates in that market segment. So, you know, prorates in horror are different than prorates in science fiction, are different than professional rates in a magazine like The New Yorker. You want to have an understanding of what sort of market you're dealing in so you know what kind of rates to ask for and or what kind of rates to be willing to submit to because, frankly, there's enough prorate-paying markets out there that submitting short fiction to a market that does not pay prorates for the genre, etc., that you're writing in is kind of a mug's game, and I frankly wouldn't recommend doing it if you're doing it with previously unpublished fiction, because that first publication has a cash premium associated with it that you want to try to take advantage of if you at all can. And if you can't, or if you decide to publish it first yourself, and there are a lot of good reasons for doing that, putting it on the market for reprints, you know, reprints have a whole other rate structure that varies with the market, and you want to be familiar with those too. So you want to look at the term of the license, meaning the length. You want to look at the rate you're being paid. You want to look at what rights you're licensing away. Remember, copyright is an infinite space of creative possibilities. So you want to understand what the terms mean in the contract. If someone is buying first world serial rights, what they're buying is the right to be the first person in the world to publish your story in a serial publication such as a magazine. If someone else has already published your story, including you, you cannot sell first world serial rights without committing fraud. You don't want to do that. And I've actually been in some panels as an audience member at science fiction conventions and watched professional authors say, "It doesn't matter, they're never going to check." Bullshit. If you do that kind of thing, you're committing fraud, which is a felony, and if you do it over the internet, you're committing wire fraud, which is a federal offense, and that can land you in federal prison. Now, okay, it's not likely to be prosecuted, but if they find out, your reputation is going to go to shit, and you could very well get sued. And that is no fun, and it's also not an honest way to be doing business in the first place. And as much as you get the image of things being different than this, business does not function without trust and the ability to audit that trust. And if you go around dealing dishonestly, eventually that reputation will mean that people will not be able to trust you and you will not be able to do business. Even if that's the worst consequence you have, that's a career-killing consequence in the long term. So, don't do that. So you want to know the term, the rate, the rights you're licensing. You want to know whether those rights are exclusive or not, and if they are exclusive, for how long they are exclusive. You want to never, never sign a contract with the phrase "all rights" in it, because you do that, you're essentially selling the copyright, and you can't even get it back as a result of the clawback clause in the copyright law, which is the 35-year rule, which you can look up online because it would take too long to explain here. If you're selling all rights, you're essentially selling the copyright in all but name, and you never get it back. You can never get it back. So if you do that, make sure you know what you're doing, and you're doing it on purpose. If someone's writing you a check that's too big to refuse, and it's the difference between being able to make a lot of money off the property later, maybe, and being able to pay your mortgage payment and keep from losing your house, well, those are the kinds of situations that sometimes people find themselves in. But know what you're doing. You don't want to make that kind of move by accident or because you got duped. take a look at the royalty and payment terms, and particularly the licensee's right to sublicense the rights. If the rights are sublicensable and the wording in the contract is not correct, what can happen is they can then sell the rights on in a variety of ways and never share the money they make from that with you. If, for example, and I recently saw an anthology contract like this, you sell a sublicensable right to be in an anthology and to have that anthology repackaged and whatnot, and there's no royalty schedule or fee schedule for the sublicensing to third parties of those rights, what can happen is the kind of thing that happened with, it was either Heinlein and Putnam or Heinlein and Berkeley, with Stranger in a Strange Land, where Heinlein licensed the rights, hardback and paperback, to one house, and then that house printed the hardback, and then sold the paperback rights to a sister company for a song without any backflow. It was for a song with no residuals. And so that sister company made boatloads of money, which Heinlein never got royalties on for the length of that deal. Now, that kind of thing is illegal. It's called self-dealing, or at least it's illegal in a lot of circumstances. It's a kind of fraud, but it's hard to prove, at least in some jurisdictions, and it will wind up taking you to court if you have to enforce it. So it's a good idea to make sure that the contract is so written that self-dealing is not going to be a realistic option for anyone reading the contract. What some other things. If you're getting paid on net profits instead of gross revenues, you want to be very careful to see how net is defined in the contract, because net can be so defined that a property that generates a fortune will never realize a profit. It's called Hollywood accounting. I've got an entire article on that on my blog. I've actually got articles on a lot of these topics on my blog. This is the book I've been pecking at writing. If you go to my blog and you go to the articles tab and look for principles of contracts, that'll give you an entire series of different gotchas that hide in contracts like this. The basic rule for a contract is you want to sell only the rights that the licensee needs in order to do the thing that the licensee represents himself as wanting to do. If the licensee is saying, I want to put your story in this anthology, and then gives you a contract that grabs expansive rights, either that licensee doesn't know what they're doing, which makes them dangerous to do business with, or that licensee is trying to defraud you by representing to you verbally one thing and putting in the contract something else. Which brings us to another thing. Anytime you sign a contract, every single understanding in your head needs to be in that contract in the kind of language that cannot be misread. Because if the person on the other end of that contract dies, or if it's with a corporation, if they get fired and someone else comes in, and someone else winds up responsible for the execution of their side of that contract, they need to be able to execute the original deal in the way that the deal was worked out. If they can't, those are the kinds of situations where people wind up in court. That's the quick and dirties. Learning how contracts work and learning how copyright works is absolutely essential. In terms of short stories, the rule in today's world, the sort of accepted market rule, is that if you license your short story out to an anthology or something like that that's going to have a ebook hanging around forever, what you're going to have is you're going to be getting a license fee for someone to use the story on a non-exclusive basis, maybe with an exclusivity period of 90 days to 6 months after publication. After which you get the rights back to do with as you see fit, but they still get to keep their book on the market. If you sign that kind of contract, those contracts, the good ones, will frequently include options to produce an audiobook, or to produce a podcast, or to sell a hardback edition, or to do this and that other thing that they could realistically do within the publishing company. And if the publishing company you're working with wants that option, and they're willing to pay you an additional nominal fee for exercising that option, that's a fantastic thing. That means in the future, if they're successful, they decide to go to another format with this stuff, you'll get an extra $20 here and there. And $20 is $20, but you get enough of those $20 coming in, and that's an income. Never sneer at money. If you're getting a good deal, don't sweep it away just because the good deal happens to be you're getting $5 for something. Those nominal option fees are fairly standard. Now, you don't want a situation where they can pay you, like with self-dealing, where they can pay you a nominal option fee and then sell the thing on to a media conglomerate or to a sister company who's then got a way to exploit the property in a very profitable way, and they never have to recompense you again for that. I'm sitting here thinking of other things. It's such a huge topic. Tell you what, here's what you need to do. You need to look over some model contracts. Go to CEFWA's got good model contracts for different things that are worth looking over. Familiarize yourself with the way language works. Go to the Principles of Contract series on my website, read through that. Take it with a grain of salt because I'm not a professional legal person. I just work here. And pick up Nolo Press's book, The Copyright Handbook by Stephen Fishman. You've got to understand copyright if you're going to be licensing it out, or you're going to wind up in situations where you lose your rights and you don't know why. What's really happened is you've sold your rights and not realized what you were giving up. So you need to understand what it is you're doing. A really, really quick and dirty guide to copyright you can find by searching for The Magic Bakery. It's a blog post that Dean Wesley Smith did years ago. And it's still probably the most concise conceptual explanation of what copyright is and how it works that I have ever heard. And it's only about 1,500 words long. So go check that out as well. Other general advice, never sign a contract that you haven't read. Never sign a contract that you don't understand. Keep in mind that terms of service on websites are in fact contracts. If you are putting stuff up through KDP and you haven't read the terms of service, shame on you. Always read the terms of service because they are legally binding. They've held up in court so far. And writers who go online and complain about Amazon doing this or that on KDP Selector and Kindle Universe are almost always complaining about things that are in the terms of service, about Amazon doing things that they've already given Amazon the right to do. So they've got no room to complain, and I got no sympathy for them. If Amazon did something outside the terms of service, that's when you call a lawyer and send a letter, and you start getting things rolling back the other way. But people tend not to do that because the things people are complaining about are things they've signed up for. In common law countries, countries whose legal system is based on English common law, the basic rule of contract law is self-responsibility. If you sign a contract and it's a bad contract, it's your problem. The law will not help you, because once you sign your name to something, you are legally accountable for everything in there. And it works both ways. There was a case in Eastern Europe, I think it was, or Russia, of someone who took a credit card offer and rewrote the terms of service on the back of the offer and signed it and sent the offer back to the credit card holder. And some of the things it entitled him to were an unlimited credit limit with 0% interest and an infinite repayment schedule and gobs of frequent flyer miles and all sorts of amazing stuff. The credit card company processed the application without reading it. They gave him the credit card, which according to the application he signed meant they had accepted the terms of service as well. So he started abiding by the terms of service that they accepted, and they took him to court, and they lost. They had to abide, even in Russia, I think this was, they had to abide by the contract that they assented to. So, you're going to be held to the standards of the contract you sign. And if you sign a contract without knowing what's in there, you got no one to blame but yourself. And you're not going to get a lot of sympathy from anyone who's been around the block a few times. Which can be a really miserable thing if you accidentally sign a contract that screws you. Early on, most of us did at one point or another. Oh, and that brings me to another thing that you should be very aware of as a writer. There are contracts floating around there. They have things like non-compete clauses in them, where you could sell a short story or a novel, and the company to whom you're selling the short story or the novel not only gets the rights you're selling, but they would get the rights to your name, the right of first refusal on anything you ever write, the sole right to commercialize your intellectual property for the length of your life. These contracts are out there. I've seen them, and they are fucking nasty. And some of them are obviously that way on purpose, and some of them are that way because the people behind them really didn't understand what it was that they were writing. They were cribbing this clause from a tech industry contract, and that clause from an auto industry contract, and a third clause from an old-style publishing contract, and it became a god-awful mess. But that god-awful mess is what's going to get read and interpreted in court, and if the person on the other side of that, or any person on the other side of that forever who happens to inherit the executory interest on that contract, reads it and gets an idea of what they've done, they can end your career under your name, they can end your career under anyone's name, you could have signed away your creative life. So be very careful about what you're signing away. I would recommend never signing anything with a non-compete clause. There are several states in which non-compete clauses are illegal anyway, and the state you're in will have laws about that, so don't just learn federal law and copyright law, but also look at your state's contract and employment laws, because they will have things that bear on the case. And generally speaking, in intellectual property law, it's the domicile of the licensor, that's you, where the laws govern. So if you sign a contract with provisions that are illegal in the state where you lived when you signed it, that can sometimes be an out. But that's still not an excuse for signing a bad contract. The last piece of advice I would offer is never sign a contract under duress. And I don't mean they're holding a gun to your head. I mean, if you feel like you don't have a choice but to take this bad deal, you should not take the deal. When you feel like you don't have a choice, that's because you have convinced yourself or someone has convinced you against your own interest to make a decision you know you're not going to be happy with. And so you start rationalizing it with, I've got to sign it, I don't have a choice. If you find yourself thinking that way, it's a red flag. You should walk away immediately from the contract, or at the very least, take the contract to a lawyer, spend the $100 they'll charge you to look it over. And by a lawyer, I mean an intellectual property lawyer, not just a guy with a law degree. Have them look it over and tell you what it is that you're signing. And I would highly recommend that on any contract. Certainly any contract for a novel or a movie option, but it wouldn't hurt you on your first short story contract to get some lawyer's annotations so that you start to get your own legal education. But yeah, if you feel bad about a deal, you shouldn't sign it. And if you do sign it, then you need to be honest with yourself about, I feel bad about this deal, I'm signing it anyway, but because I signed it, I'm going to live up to it because that's what I opted into. Owning the consequences of your decisions makes a vast amount of difference in your mental health, and it'll make a vast amount of difference in the progress of your career. It makes you more resilient, able to learn from bad decisions. Whereas if you rationalize to yourself and comfort yourself and try to make yourself feel okay about the mistake that you've made or about the unfortunate deal that you've taken part in, you're not going to learn from that mistake, and you are going to be much easier to scam next time because you will have already gotten the practice in scamming yourself. I hope that answers your question, Kay, and I realize that there's a lot of generalities in there. It's a very complex subject, and I commend you for even having the fortitude to ask. Please take the time to learn this on your own. Suck up every available resource you can and learn the law as best you can. That way you'll be able to interpret advice or suggestions from people who have opinions on these matters from an informed point of view. That's all I got for you today, so I'll see you tomorrow. NaNoWriMo Every Month is written and presented by J. Daniel Sawyer and produced by Artistic Whispers Productions. Visit our website at NaNoWriMoEveryMonth.com and leave a tip in the tip jar or join the Patreon to support this podcast. NaNoWriMo Every Month is copyright 2016 by J. Daniel Sawyer and Artistic Whispers Productions and is released under a Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution No Derivatives License.